Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie joined by John. What is happening?
Dude, I don't know, man. We're in the middle of football season. This is the best time of year. Football, chilly, more chilly.
More cool. Lack of heat is my favorite part of it.
I went outside today and just didn't want to die, so that's a step in the right direction.
I think you're probably right. We have had this case cooking for quite a while, and I am just so excited to dive into the details here.
Yeah, it's a really good one. Before we get started, I do want to say thank you to a new Patreon member, and that is Charlie Philbrick. So Charlie joined at the $7 a month levels. So thank you so much, Charlie. I put some stuff in the mail for you. And if you become a new Patreon member, don't forget, I will send you some swag that's left over from CrimeCon. So Phil, you're going to be surprised by a couple of things, and then you also get your autographed picture of us, which you can use to scare away crows from your garden.
Great for dartboards, I'll tell you that much.
Yep.
I also have a thank you to a new 5-star review that came over on Apple Podcasts. This is from John512, which is
not me,
not you. Said, I've been listening for a few years now after first hearing y'all on Talk is Jericho, and I've been hooked ever since. We were on Talk is Jericho last week, if you haven't checked it out, about the
Ken
and Barbie killers. I usually put it on while I'm gaming or driving, and it always makes time fly by. I'll definitely be subscribing to Patreon soon to support y'all, so thank you for that.
Awesome.
Was wondering if y'all had ever covered the disappearance of Jason Landry. I'm from the college town where he went to school, and there's been some talk about new evidence. Hopefully it's true so his family can get some answers. Keep doing what you're doing. The show just keeps getting better. I did go back and look. We have covered Jason Landry's story on A True Crime to Go, so that's one of the episodes that's 10 minutes or less, and maybe we need a full one.
Yeah, that's interesting for sure, but thank you so much for taking the time to leave that review. Appreciate that, and all the others too.
Yep, we appreciate you guys. And without further ado, John, what do we got today?
We're going to be talking about a case that took place in the, late 2000s, and it almost had the O.J. Simpson vibe, because what I mean by that is it went live on television for the whole world to see. Do you remember this case? We're going to be talking about the Balloon Boy.
Yeah, as we watched the O.J. Simpson Bronco chase, here we watched a balloon fly across the air, wondering if there was a child inside, and if so, were they going to make it safely?
I mean, we all thought there was a spaceship-looking balloon that was traveling really high in the air, so we all thought there was a boy in there, and if this little boy fell out, he was going to die.
Right.
And we were watching this live on television.
So what if, I don't want to spoil it, a child did not fall from the balloon. But what if he had?
We were watching it, and at any moment we could have seen a little boy die. So yeah, let's dig into this case, man, because this is wild. So
let's start with his parents.
Get the ball rolling, man.
His dad, Richard Heaney, and his mom, Mayumi Lazuka, met at an acting school in Los Angeles. Richard had tried his hand at stand-up comedy. He tried to be an actor, but never caught his big break. These two got married in 1997, and they were in a business out of their home where they would produce demo reels for other actors. So trying to help other people put their work together to get gigs. And Richard did a bunch of side jobs. He was the kind of guy who really liked to have his hand in everything. He tried to be an actor, a comedian, tried to be an inventor. And people who worked with him described him as a shameless self-promoter who would do almost anything to advance his latest endeavor. And here's an example. After a storm took the roof off of a building he was working on, Richard decided to become a storm chaser. He and Mayumi regularly took their kids along chasing storms. And again, around that time, and I don't know, even now, that's kind of a popular thing to do, is record yourself chasing tornadoes and big storms.
Yeah, I mean, if I did it, I would want one of those really thick steel plated armor vehicles. But
go back to the original
it'd be fun.
Twister movie. They're just rolling in a pickup truck.
Yeah. And I can't remember those little orbs they launched into the tornado, what those were called, but I remember the machine was called the Dorothy.
Love it.
So this family had three sons, Bradford, Rayo, and Falcon. And I mean, I'm just going to sound super judgmental, but hearing the name of a child named Falcon tells me all I need to know about this family.
And I wonder where the name Ryo came from. I mean, Mayumi was Asian. Maybe that had some background there, but Bradford seems like a, I don't know, fairly straightforward name.
I don't know. It's the worst kind of tree. Okay, you know,
my bad.
Yeah.
I don't think his middle name is Pear.
It's an invasive tree. So because Richard considered himself to be an inventor, the family was always doing science experiments and projects with their young boys. That part's cool, you know? Go make a volcano on a Tuesday night? Sure. That sounds fun.
Throw some Mentos in a 2-liter, see what happens. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah, but things get out of control, as we'll talk about here in a minute. But this family, you mentioned they had, the dad at least, had an interest in kind of wanting to become popular or at least on TV in some way. Well, this family was actually featured on the reality show Wife Swap on two different occasions. So if you're not familiar with this show, it is exactly what the name implies. The families will take a mom from another family and then she's in charge of this family for like a week or so.
Right.
It almost never ends great. They usually get like the really strict mom will come in and try to wrangle up the disorderly kids. I guess in this instance, maybe she's a normal mom or a normal mom comes to this family and then they just do weird science experiments. I didn't see the episodes.
He was certainly a character on there.
Well, I mean, we have evidence to back up the fact that he was a character. He expressed a couple of times on that show that he believed that humanity descended from aliens. And he also talked about launching a homemade saucer into the storms that he and his family were chasing. So, yeah, I mean, this guy had some pretty out there worldviews and expressed those publicly. He had looked into media interest into a reality show about his family where they would investigate mysteries of science, but nothing really panned out.
Yeah, he's out there hustling, really trying to find some fame and fortune. And he mentioned that the reason they signed up for Wife Swap was the paycheck. Obviously, they pay the families to do that. And that's why he signed up.
I don't know there's enough money to make me want to do that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
my life is fine. I don't need somebody to come in and try to change things up. Yeah. I like my wife. I don't want to swap her.
Yeah, if somebody wants to come in my house and try to boss me around, but I'm not going to send my wife to somebody else's house.
Yeah, what if she likes them more?
I ain't down for that. Psh, good chance for me.
Yeah, me too.
All right. So meanwhile, Richard had not given up on this dream of making what he called a flying saucer. Essentially, it was some kind of weather balloon, which if you read any Roswell reports, it's going to tell you that was a weather balloon. He started working on this saucer-shaped balloon that he said was a prototype of a vehicle that he thought people could use above traffic. He wanted to use it, first of all, to gather information about storms, but in some ways, he thought this might be the first step toward flying vehicles like the Jetsons. This balloon was 20 feet in diameter, which is pretty big. If you step back and think about putting two basketball goals on top of each other, it was about 5 feet high. It was made from plastic tarps that were taped together, so maybe not the best construction. Covered it in aluminum foil to give it a silver, shiny outer surface. And held it together with duct tape and steel rods.
MacGyver built this.
The base was a box made with thin plywood and cardboard on the side. It also was held together by duct tape and string. The youngest son, Falcon, loved hiding in the base of the flying saucer while they were working on it, when they were playing hide-and-seek. It was just known to be a place where he hung out. And in listening to the family, Falcon really liked to just, I don't know, go into a hidden part of the home or a place where nobody was. He really liked to go find places to be alone and, I don't know, have people come find him or do whatever he wanted to do by himself. He said he was a pretty chaotic kid. As somebody who has four children at home, I can say that, at least in my experience, they do get a little wilder the more kids you get. So he's the third one, and they're having trouble keeping up with him.
So on October the 15th, 2009, this family was experimenting with their flying saucer balloon when the launch went terribly wrong. So the family counts down from three before releasing a cord, and then allegedly the tethers keeping it from flying away snapped. Now, Jamie, there's video of this, so I want to just play the audio of that now so that you all can hear the utter pandemonium that ensues.
Are you going to fly now?
Hey, hold on, Brad. Cut. Record.
Yeah.
Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Whoa!
Oh my God. Okay. Are you here? Hey, Taylor!
What?
You didn't put the tether down!
So in that video, you can hear that things don't go according to plan. This saucer, if you could see the video, it's the flying saucer-like balloon. It's tethered to the ground. They let it go. I guess they're just expecting it to go like a few feet off the ground. But then when the ropes drop, this thing just kind of takes off and goes like above the trees. And the dad is furious. He starts kicking the ground. But then they realize like, was somebody in there? Was Falcon hiding in there?
Yeah, and this video came out probably the next day after this whole incident was over, or later in the day. And I don't know, after you hear the rest of the story, if you haven't heard it already, it seems like he was over. He went from zero to why didn't you get the effing tether like really quickly, right?
Yeah, and again, this is not like precious metal. This is tarps and duct tape and a little bit of helium. So if the video were to play a little bit longer, you can almost hear one of the other kids trying to tell his very upset dad that Falcon is gone and perhaps he was in the base of the balloon. So the first thing Richard said he did was to call the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. And then they told him to call 911.
Why would you not call 911 first?
Yeah, I guess. I would not even think to call the FAA. I feel like I would call 911 and then they would relay that call to whoever they need to.
How much time did it take? Did he have the FAA's number sitting there? And if so, I think that's kind of sus too.
Yeah. Well, this is 2009, so the smartphone was around. But still, I feel like that's a pretty deep Google search. Like, it's not just going to... Like, who am I going to call? Like, where are they at?
Right.
Does every state have one?
I don't know.
Like, I feel like that would be a 20-minute ordeal for me just to find that number. But they told him to call 911. Then he supposedly called the local Denver NBC station, KUSA-TV, to ask that a news helicopter be flown in to track this balloon. And then he called 911. So allegedly, he called FAA first. They told him to call 911, and he was like, screw that. I'm calling NBC and KUSA-TV, and then he called 911. During the 911 call, Richard could be heard saying, I don't know whether it's possible you guys could detect electricity that it emits, and then it emits 1,000,000 volts on the outer skin. So what does he have this thing rigged up to, like a nuclear warhead? Like, I don't understand you might as well say 1.21 gigawatts because it's a lot of electricity.
You probably should. Yeah.
I don't understand how it could possibly emit that.
And why is that information you want? Like, is he saying that's what you need? It's a big stinking balloon coming up in a residential neighborhood. I mean.
Again, tarps and duct tape.
Tarps and duct tape. Local authorities were called, and Bob Heffernan from the Larimer County Sheriff's office and his team searched the home 3 times looking for Falcon. Cause of course they thought, well, hopefully he's not in there. Let's see if we can find him. Meanwhile, that helicopter took off in search of what was being called a flying saucer. The pilot spotted the balloon when it was about 10,000 feet in the air, and it was moving pretty fast with the wind. And 10,000 feet, that's not exactly like planes go higher than that. But that's really, really high. And if somebody is there, I can't imagine how scary that would be. It drifted for over 60 miles and across 2 counties, and they had to reroute 2 planes so that it wouldn't hit the balloon. Soon the story of the balloon boy was all over the news. It broke nationally. We were all on pins and needles watching the coverage, trying to figure out, is he in there? You're looking and trying to say, oh, I think I saw a foot stick out. I think I saw this or that. The balloon was in the air for over 2 hours. And then it finally started coming down near Keensburg, which is about 12 miles northeast of the Denver International Airport, which most people know has its own sorts of mythology there. Rescue teams ascended upon the balloon. There were news teams there. Actually, the first person to get there was a news person. So they're going to see, A, is there a kid in here? B, if there is he okay? And if he's not, where is he? And that's what we'll get into after the break of where is Falcon?
Everyone was watching this live on TV. Legit, I was watching it for sure. Do you remember if you were watching it?
Oh, absolutely. It was all the rage. It was, I don't know, I was out of college by this time. So at work, we're turning on the news websites and TV in the office. And what's going to happen with this boy? Where is he? Everybody hoping he's okay, but glued to the TV to find out.
Yeah, I was expecting to be a dad for the very first time. So I remember the thought of a little boy falling out of this balloon and just being tragic and heartbroken for this family. And everyone was beginning to fear the worst, that Falcon had fallen out of the balloon somewhere and that he was hurt or most likely dead somewhere. The sheriff's office were able to kind of look at the video and make a statement saying that the door on the balloon, or, you know, the little section of, I don't know what you would call that,
the base or the hatch
or whatever, was not breached in any way. It wasn't broken. So that was at least good news. A deputy did report that they saw something fall from the balloon near Platteville, Colorado. There's actually a photograph of the balloon in flight, and there's a small black dot beneath it. And some people suggested that that was the boy falling out, and that was captured on at least a photograph, maybe video. Now, the Colorado search and rescue crews were dispatched along the balloon's route and trying to see if he had actually fallen out, and nobody had saw it happen. And then at 4:14 p.m., CNN and other outlets reported Falcon was found at home. So here we are chasing this balloon what seemed like an eternity, and then they broke news saying that he was found and he was at home. So immediately I was like, well, where was he at home that nobody knew where he was at?
Because they had searched the home quite a bit. Authorities and his family said they had.
Absolutely. So I was like, well, what is going on here? So he had been hiding in the rafters above the garage the entire time. According to Falcon, on the day of the search, he had tried to climb into the balloon a few times, but he got yelled at by his dad. So this made him feel scared. So he decided he didn't want to go be around that anymore. So he went to his favorite hiding spot, and that was in the attic above the garage. He says that he got bored in there and actually fell asleep. And when he woke up, he remembers waking up to a lot of noise in the house. So he went down to see what all this fuss was about, and he found lots of people inside of his home, and he did not recognize any of them.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of questions, and everybody was kind of like, what, how do you miss the kid if you're searching the house? But I don't know that I ever initially thought, huh, this was some kind of hoax or it was on purpose. I just thought it was, I don't know, maybe people not intelligent enough to know where their kid was. So I was judging pretty hard of what they were going through, and it started to emerge, you know, this is going to be an ongoing story. They're going to be asked consistently what went on, what happened here, and they're going to be making their rounds on the news. And in preparing for those things, news anchors and stations started putting together information. One piece of interesting information is that this search for the balloon, the tracking of the balloon between all the technology used and officers, was about $40,000. The Colorado National Guard brought in two helicopters, and those flights alone cost $14,500. So this was a very expensive search. And in cases we've covered over the years, we've talked about the expenses that go into a case, especially when you're searching an area. So everybody was interested in the story, what really happened. And one call came in that they couldn't say no to. That was to be on Larry King Live the very next morning. So they're in this interview. You can see the family all seated together. Falcon's cuddled up next to his dad. And he was asked, why didn't you come out when you heard people calling your name? He starts to squirm a little bit and kind of looks around. And he looked up at his dad and said, you said that we did this for a show. Which automatically changed the entire trajectory of this story, because it seemed like Falcon was confessing that his dad was telling him to hide and not come out when he heard noises or whatever. So John, the initial reaction there, can you take that as anything other than that being what he's saying when he says it?
Yeah. I mean, you can try to explain it away, but it feels like this is what that kid was thinking, that, you know, I had to stay up there because I was told this was all for a show. And yeah. I mean, they had been on Wife Swap. They had tried to be on other shows. So in his little world, it makes sense.
It did. So everybody at this point shifts gears. Not only are we interested in this family story, we want to see if this was a hoax. And there's a documentary, Trainwreck, Balloon Boy, on Netflix. Highly recommend it. And this is how they explain what happened. Richard says that before the segment crew for Larry King Live got to his house, they had been asking Falcon to show him how they got in the attic. So like the cameraman and the crew was saying, hey, how'd you get up there, buddy? And Richard says that when they asked him on the air, he was referring to the guys in the attic who were producing the show, asked him about getting in the attic. So he was confused as to them asking about what happened on the day of the balloon, or when you just showed them, why were you getting up in the attic just now? It was for the show. And that's their explanation.
Yeah, that's convenient. So the next morning, the family was actually on Good Morning America. And when asked again why he didn't come out when people were hollering or yelling for him, he got so nervous that he left the set to go throw up.
Thankfully, he said that before he left. So there's no speculation there.
Yeah, like he said, I'm going to go throw up.
Yeah, he did.
So this made people even more suspicious that the boy was being told to lie or to, you know, take the first question and then fake like you're sick and leave so that you don't have to get any more questions.
So that we can answer the questions.
So not only were the viewers skeptical, but it also caught the attention of the police. So the sheriff's office began to really investigate whether or not this incident was, you know, a tragic, you know, or potentially tragic, you know, accident that could have went terribly wrong, but didn't, or was this more of a publicity stunt? So the police consulted with a Colorado State University physics professor, and they determined that based on the dimensions that were provided by Richard, it was possible that this balloon could take off with the 37-pound child inside. But when investigators measured the actual balloon, they found that it weighed 18 more pounds than Richard had said that it did, meaning that it would not have been able to lift Falcon off the ground.
I don't claim to be a physics expert, so I can't really tell you whether or not this could have supported a boy of that size. I don't know exactly how much he weighed. I guess they said 37 pounds, but I don't know. If you weigh that much, your weight varies throughout the day. The wind was blowing certain ways. Like, there's so much math that goes in there that I have trouble putting 100% reliability on it. But if they were going to do this, why would they do it? Why did their family want to be on the national news across the country and eventually all around the world? Again, when you look at their past, they had been on Wife Swap. Richard had been trying to get a reality show for his home. Just a few months before this incident, he had pitched a reality show to TLC specifically. I mean, this is on the heels of like John and Kate Plus 8 and and all those huge shows going into families' homes and showing people. After this incident, one of the producers of YSWAP told authorities that a show involving the Heaney family was in the works, but since this happened, they were calling the deal off.
So later, police would tell Richard to come down to the station and retrieve his balloon. And while he was there, they asked Richard some questions and actually offered to give him a polygraph test. There's a video of him taking this test, and let me just tell you, it's strange. So first off, he doesn't answer questions directly. And at some points, he would even get up and walk around in the middle of this test, and he said that he was doing this for his circulation, getting up and walking around in the middle. I can't believe they didn't tell him, like, sit down. We need you to stay seated.
You know, they may have, but he seems like you heard the video earlier. He's a pretty hostile dude when he wants to be.
Dude, at one point, and this is like the climax of that story, he even pretended to fall asleep. So this test went terrible. Coincidentally, would you believe me if I told you these are all published tactics on how to beat a polygraph test?
I would almost say that it was in a search history, but at the time, I don't know that they could find that as quickly.
So, surprise, surprise, the test came back inconclusive. So, right after this, they brought in his wife, and I'm assuming they wanted to do the same polygraph test on her, but she confessed to planning the entire incident. Now, she claims today that her admission of guilt or whatever was due to a language barrier, and she falsely confessed because she didn't really understand what they were saying or what she said. She said that she was unfamiliar with the word hoax, so simply agreed with law enforcement when they asked her, was this a hoax? It's important to note that she has a degree in English from her school in Japan and had 3 years of college after coming to the United States. So some people question the validity of whether or not she did have a language barrier.
Yeah, if you hear her speak, it is pretty clear that English is not her first language. But I think if you're going into that situation, even the most confused people would, before saying, yes, it was this thing, would question, what do you mean by that? Or help me get somebody in here that can help me translate what's happening. But she didn't do any of that. And she took a polygraph as well, and she absolutely failed. During a press conference that came out on October 18th, authorities called this whole thing a hoax. They said, we believe we have evidence at this point to indicate that this was a publicity stunt in hopes to better market themselves for a reality show. The following day, Richard's attorney announced that Richard and Mayumi would surrender themselves to the police as soon as the charges were filed, and they planned to plead not guilty because in no way did they think that this was a publicity stunt. They were scared for their child's life. The FAA proposed a fine of $11,000 for launching of an unauthorized aircraft. Other fines on the table were up to from $2,000 to $500,000 for committing a Class 4 felony. He could also have received between 2 and 6 years for these charges. Mayumi was also facing a potential penalty. By committing a Class 3 misdemeanor, she could get up to 6 months in prison and a fine ranging from $50 up to $750. So Richard is getting charged more than her. This was his quote-unquote science experiment. Now, the affidavit in this case alleges that the couple planned the hoax for 2 weeks before releasing this balloon on October 15th. It also states that the couple instructed their 3 children to lie to authorities as well as the media regarding the hoax for the purpose of making the family more marketable for future media interests, which, given their history, does fall in line with who the evidence says they are.
Man, this is weird, you know, like find something else to do, but think about, did they think about like all the people who would be out searching and, you know, God forbid one of them rushing to the scene of where they think this balloon could be flying over just to make sure their little boy doesn't fall out. And then they get in a wreck or something like that. I mean, this had potential to be a lot worse than it really was.
Absolutely.
So they did not want to plead guilty to anything. They maintained that this was a hoax, or this was not a hoax, rather, and that this was not something that they had planned with their children. But their attorneys claim that the authorities threatened to deport the mom back to Japan if she did not take the plea, which if that's the case, that's pretty crappy, but, you know, it's neither here nor there now, I guess. On November 13, Richard pleaded guilty to a felony charge of attempting to influence a public servant, and she pled guilty to a misdemeanor charge of false reporting to authorities. On December the 23rd, 2009, Richard was sentenced to 90 days in jail and 100 hours of community service, and then he was also ordered to write a letter of apology to all the agencies that helped in the search for Falcon. Now, she was sentenced to only 20 days, but she could serve that as like a jail-supervised community service 2 days a week, and she was allowed to begin her sentence right after her husband's ended so that someone would be able to care for the children. The couple were also banned from making any profits off of this hoax for several years, and Richard was ordered to pay $36,000 in restitution.
Yeah, so first of all, what's your reaction to this sentence? So to be clear, Mayumi didn't have to spend any time in jail. She would go each day and report to the jail and then be sent out to do her service. So she didn't actually have to like spend the night there or anything.
But yeah. And it was only 2 days a week. So
Richard did. And they had to pay back $36,000. And that's not even including legal fees and other things they had to pay back. So do you think this is, if they are guilty enough, too much?
Yeah, I mean,
Goldilocks this. Was it just right?
Yeah, I think it was just right. I mean, in the scheme of things, no one was hurt. It was a waste of community resources. So I think restitution to pay that back is completely fair. Now, you know, he'll probably only pay like $2 a week, but still, you know, I think it's fair. So yeah, I'm totally okay with this.
I am too. I think the restitution was the main part, and anything on top of that is kind of just sending a message, making an example and that kind of thing. And I'm really okay with it. But right from the get-go, Richard said publicly every time he spoke, starting in January of 2010, that he only pleaded guilty to keep his wife from being deported. In 2015, he told the Today Show that it was definitely not a hoax. And in 2019, the whole family told ABC News that it wasn't a hoax and it was all to save Mayumi from deportation is the only reason they ever claimed any responsibility.
So they've doubled down on this and they've never said that it was actually a hoax.
In the year 2020, the governor of Colorado, Governor Polis, issued pardons to both of them and publicly said, "We all just need to move on from this." Now, they had already paid a price in the eyes of the public, according to him, and it was time for everybody to move past it. Dahini's charges were removed from their records, and he said that they deserved a second chance. And this is a quote from the governor at the time. "It's time to no longer let a permanent criminal record from the Balloon Boy saga follow and drag down the parents for the rest of their lives."
I mean, like a tether?
Yeah. Oh, man. Like a tether. And I think that's great.
What is this permanent record prohibiting them from doing? I mean, does he want to work at like a helium factory or something? And they're like, "Well, you don't know.
They've seen you use this falsely before." And I mean, isn't that the point of having, like, if they believe they did this, then they should be held accountable. And whatever ramifications come from that are deserved if they're guilty, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it does suck if this was a complete accident and now he can't get certain jobs because of a felony, then yeah, that sucks. Especially if he did plead guilty just to avoid his wife being deported. I don't know. There's a whole lot that we could pick out and tease out, but the couple maintains to this day that they were not trying to seek attention with the balloon saucer, the flying balloon saucer during the documentary. Richard says that makes no sense. Why would I even consider doing something that's going to turn on me, potentially even sending me to jail? Like, how am I going to get a TV show doing that? Well, to that, I would just say, well, because you didn't think a few steps ahead, my man.
Yeah, you didn't think you would get caught.
Shortly after the Balloon Boy incident, the family moved to Florida, which is like, you know, that's just a perfect landing spot for them.
Yeah, shocked that this didn't start in Florida.
Yeah. So today, Falcon is in his early 20s, and he says that he doesn't have any memories of the Balloon Boy event. He says that most of the stuff I remember is just from videos that I've watched of it. It's all kind of foggy, is what he says about it. Falcon also says that he remembers how insane things got because of what he said. Yeah, I'm sure your parents didn't like that because it kind of set off this legal trial. He says, I remember feeling bad that I did something wrong. And that sucks. You know,
that does,
that,
yeah.
That this kid thinks that he was the problem.
Because either way, if it was a hoax, not his fault. If it wasn't a hoax and he said that, still not his fault. He's six.
Yeah. So, but just looking back on it now, he says that I was 6 years old and all of these adults took what I said and they were able to string together what they thought was something else and make it so, so big. It's baffling.
I will say that I really... Hearing directly from Falcon was my favorite part of this documentary.
So these days, Falcon and his brothers make tiny homes on their compound in Florida. And he would go on to say, quote, I have a track record of hiding in small spaces. So I guess it makes sense that I'm building tiny homes. So yeah. I love that. Was it? I mean, I haven't, in full transparency, I have not watched it. Was it basically a promotional video for his tiny homes, big commercial?
It wasn't just a really quick comment. And again, I thought hearing from him was fascinating. He doesn't remember any of this, so I think he believes his parents that it wasn't a hoax, but I don't think he can know that for sure. I don't think his memory's good enough. Now, his other brothers are also interviewed, and they claim that none of this was a hoax either, but kind of what do you expect them to say at this point?
Yeah, man, this is wild. I mean, if you had to place a bet on was this a hoax or was the dad legitimately concerned that his child was in the box under the balloon, where are you putting your bet?
I think it was a hoax and it just got a lot bigger, a lot faster than they wanted it to. And perhaps at first that was a good thing, but then obviously turned on them. What about you?
Yeah, I tend to think it was a hoax. That's kind of where my gut lands. Now, do you think that they made money off this documentary? Do you think the time has elapsed on that judgment where they can turn a profit on this now?
I do. And based on, we made a TikTok about the Unknown Number documentary made, the high school catfish, and them giving that mom airtime makes me furious, but I know she also got paid for it. So
I would love to just talk more about that, but the fact that she did what she did is crazy, but the fact that she did what she did and wants to make money off of it and for the whole world to know how big of a dirtbag she is,
yeah,
that's potentially the craziest part.
It is, and I only brought that up to say that, yeah, I think Netflix paid the family for this. Especially since they've been pardoned, I assume that a part of that was that they were released from the ban of making money off of this, and I don't know, even in the documentary, the mom seems quiet and reserved. The dad seems like he's there to make a name for himself. So he continues to be the Richard that he was presented to be in the media, and I see no reason to think otherwise. There was no, from what I saw, not even an apology of this wasn't on purpose, but I'm so sorry that people were in danger, that we took resources. Like, it was just complete evasiveness. So that makes me less likely to believe you.
Yeah, man. I wonder what Falcon's relationship is with his parents. I mean, if he grew up kind of thinking that they were pissed off at him for having said that, that sucks. And I'm sure that there's still some resentment there perhaps, but maybe they were able to move on.
Hey, which kid are we going to say is in the balloon? I don't know. One of them's named after a bird. Let's go with that.
Yeah. And let's give him DayQuil or NyQuil and make him go sleep in the hot attic.
Yeah, and I don't know. That's the piece for me, that if this was not a hoax, how do you not know where? Like, I know where my kids' hiding spots are. I know, like, am I just an overbearing parent to think that I could find my kid at any given point?
Yeah, I mean, like, and this thing is not huge. I mean, it would fit in an average living room, right? So, like, I think you're going to know if a 9-year-old's hiding in the box.
Yeah.
Because it's not, it's pretty crude and elementary. I mean, it's aluminum foil wrapped tarps with duct tape and then a cardboard box. Don't you think when the balloon takes off, unless he's completely unconscious, you're going to hear him say, "Help, help."
Yeah. You know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but yeah, the reality is that thing would not have taken off with him inside of it. He would have been an anchor. But was the dad smart enough to know that? I mean, he's making duct tape helium balloons in his backyard and launching them for fun. So
he is. And I mean, he calls the FAA first. So many pieces of this just scream that it's not authentic. So I have a really hard time believing it is. So I think the evidence points toward a hoax. I don't know what you'd have to do to talk me out of it, but it would be, it would have to be pretty strong.
I'm going to say something probably that will offend some, but like, even if it wasn't a hoax, you know, you're a deadbeat parent for not knowing where your kid's in the box. So still paying restitution is something I'm okay with.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Like it sucks, but you know, those people don't work for free, and our tax money shouldn't pay for your stupidity.
If you want to claim to be a scientist and include your family in this, you need to take safety precautions so that this would be impossible, not just yell at your wife for not fixing the tethers the way that you wanted to. Secure the tethers, secure every part of it before you let it go. Check the box, check the base, check the hatch. Like, there's so much negligence here, regardless of the intention.
And watch Honey, I Shrunk the Kid to know that you should not do these types of experiments at home, because they could have catastrophic results for your children.
They really could, even when they come back to normal size. But yep. No, this is a fascinating story. And if before we start digging back into it, if you would have asked me, I would have said it was in the late 90s. It being in the late 2009, to me, seems way later than it was memory.
It seems like I was so much younger, but I was an adult.
Yes, and we still are, which sucks. If you're not an adult and you're listening to this, don't become one.
Yeah, and if you do become one, at least know where your children are and don't tether them to a balloon or fake doing said things.
Yes, that's a strong message, and we stand behind it.
Yeah, man. Guys, we love you and we appreciate you. Please take a moment to leave a rating and a review and consider joining Patreon. Know that if you do, I'll send you some swag.
You guys are the best. Thanks so much.
Love you guys. And until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.